calling from Moscow. I'm together with Christian Berno from our Industry Relations and Peter Andrescu, one of our solicitors. First, I would like to introduce to what has happened today, where Telenor reluctantly filed 3 lawsuits against VimpelCom. A company that we are committed to see grow and continue to flourish. The management of VimpelCom, at the urging of the APA Group, which is also a shareholder, has blatantly and repeatedly disregarded the company's charter and Russian law. This purchase of closed joint stock company, Ukrainian Radio System, also called the URS Group. In our opinion, VimpelCom paid a widely inflated price for URS, a company with a tiny market share and no rational business case. The violation of VimpelCom charter and Russian law are numerous, including circumventing minority shareholder protections inherent in the company's charter, convening a shareholder meeting in violation of Russian law, misleading and withholding information from shareholders about the URS acquisition, completing the URS acquisition without board approval. And for many months, Telenor tried to resolve this issue as a member of the board and primary shareholder. And now we are taking the extraordinary step of filing these lawsuits to compel VimpelCom management and also group to recommit themselves to transparency, corporate governance, and financial controls. We are also asking VimpelCom management to share with us, as well as other shareholders, regulators, the public, analysts, and the news media, and other interest parties, the details of the URS acquisition, including the purchase agreement, the names of the beneficial owners of the URS, the names of who received the sales proceeds, and we must say we are proud of our investment in VimpelCom and our contribution to the company's growth and profitability. And Telenor has helped VimpelCom to grow more than 45 million subsidiaries and a market cap now of $10 billion. And we urge VimpelCom's management and the Alpha Group to recommit themselves to ethical business practice and to work with us to continue building value at VimpelCom through best practice, innovation, and adherence to corporate governance. So now we will take a question, and this will be handled then by Christian, Bernard, Peter Driscoll, and myself.
If you have questions, please press star key followed by 1. From UBS, Mr. Wright.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you. I have 3 questions, if I may. The first one is the court that you actually file these suits. What's the seniority of this court, and if there is a decision, what are your avenues to appeal, or indeed other parties' avenue to appeal? The second one is, can you give us any feel for the likely timeline on which you expect this this case to proceed? And the third one is, just to confirm, the way the press release reads, it's really 3 separate suits. Is it true that there are really 3 separate proceedings, that we really would expect sort of 3 separate rulings, or is it sort of all 3 claims within 1 big sort of case? Thank you.
Hello, good afternoon. My name is Peter Ojesko. I'm a partner at Warwick Harrington and Sutcliffe, based in London and Moscow. The Telenor has asked me to assist on this call today with some guidance as to the nature of these suits. There are 3 separate suits. They have been commenced in the Moscow Arbitration Court, which is the basic business court for Russia. There is an appeals process so appeals are always possible. The reason for the three separate cases is that in Russia it's customary where you have either separate causes of action or separate parties that you would bring individually in separate cases. Here, Zimbalcom is a party or a defendant in all three cases. One of the cases, though, however, also names the five offshore companies based in BBI in Cyprus and the one individual that Telenor believes were the sellers of URS to Zimbalcom. And obviously we're seeking to find out and confirm the identity of the sellers as part of this case.
Thank you. Could you maybe add regards to the timeline, whether there are sort of any indications, maybe how similar cases have proceeded in that court, or any sort of indication already on the present cases? Thank you.
No problem. Russian cases can take some time. It's not unusual for cases to take 6 months or more, or even a year or more in some cases. It just depends on how the case goes, whether people are available for hearings and the schedule of the judges. So we anticipate this could be a lengthy process.
Thank you very much.
The next one is Mr. Gardner from Morgan Stanley.
Thank you very much. Just looking at the press release and your comments earlier, you seem to be blaming both Alpha and the management of Zimbalcom. What sort of a remedial action do you have against the management there? And if you could just indicate when their contracts are up for voting again, whether it's at this next AGM. And also just to add to that, how many votes do you have to get in favor from the board perspective to secure a position on the management team?
You're asking if the board will be confident in the management team?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, because it sounds like from an operational point of view, you're not supporting the Zimbalcom management at this stage, so I'm trying to understand how that plays through into their positions in the company.
From what I know from the charter, we have to have a supermajority to take out the managing director. So that's nothing that can be done by Telenor.
Okay, great.
Next one is Mr. Nielsen from Chabreur.
Thank you. Peter Kernelsen from Chabreur in London. Two questions, please. Firstly, you sort of made clear your position on this acquisition of UAS. Do you believe there are any alternative motives for the Alpha Group and the management pressing ahead with this acquisition, and could you elaborate a bit on that? And secondly, even if you should manage to stop, to prevent the transaction from actually being implemented, or whether or not this court case goes in your favor or not, could you comment a bit on how you view the relationship between Telenor and the Alpha Group going forward? I mean, this has it reached a point where it is not sustainable any longer? Thank you.
But when it comes to alternatives, we want this transaction stopped and minded, and we are very clear on that. And we don't want to send the business case, which is completely unrealistic. So the company has to come back and commit themselves to what they call good corporate governance in the future. When it comes to how we view the relationships between the parties here, I think it's possible to go back to what we have written in agreements, both the shareholder agreements and the charters of the company, and be back in a position where we execute this good corporate governance in all situations, and that means it's no compromise for us, except that has to be the case. We have to execute on what's in the charter and shareholders agreement.
Okay, just follow up again on my first question. Do you believe there's an alternative motive for this since you clearly reject the business case?
Alternative motive?
Yes, by the Alpha Group and the management in pursuing this agreement, this transaction.
Well, what we have observed is that this deal was proposed to Golden Telecom 2 months before it was proposed for VimpelCom, and that at that time, at the price of 100 billion US, it was rejected by the board of Golden Telecom, and 2 months later, it was proposed for the board of for VimpelCom to during the process now have accepted that price. And that was to both companies proposed by Mr. Vesnikovic. So you can speculate if it's something more behind this deal.
Thank you.
Next one is Mr. Kristensen from BS Burns. Okay.
Oh, good afternoon. It is Alex Kuznetsov from Berstein. Could you highlight what articles of the Russian Civil Code or other pieces of Russian legislation have been violated in your view? My second question is regarding identity of the sellers. How does identity of the sellers of Ukraine IT systems affect VimpelCom and Telenor? And finally, it's my understanding that Russian law usually gives priority to shareholders' decisions rather than decisions of the board of directors. Why do you believe in case of VimpelCom, board's approval was still necessary even despite the EGM approved the transaction?
Okay, I'll be happy to address that, Mr. Kuznetsov. This is Peter Odiskol from ORIC. The violations to which we refer, with one exception, are violations of the joint stock company law, and there's a variety of different provisions that were violated here, mostly having to do with the convening and the holding of an extraordinary general meeting of shareholders. But let's just go through those in a little bit more detail. In our first claim, the failures that we've identified are the fact that the VimpelCom board was bypassed and did not propose to shareholders the approval of the URS transaction as an interested party transaction. The joint stock company law requires that interested party transactions be proposed by the board to the shareholders for approval, and that did not happen here. The VimpelCom board was not given the opportunity to meet to make that proposal because Pavel Krulikov, the VimpelCom board member who proposed the interested party transaction to the board and who contrived to create the interested party transaction itself by getting himself appointed to the board of Carino, one of the sellers of URS, he did not attend deliberately the meeting that was considering whether to propose this transaction to the shareholders. So that meeting didn't occur. That allowed Alpha to take advantage of another provision of the joint stock company law that gives the shareholder the right to call a meeting. However, the way in which that was done, again, was illegal. The entity that called the meeting was a company called BNY Clearing International Nominees Limited, which is a nominee company owned by the Bank of New York. But it is not, in fact, a shareholder of VimpelCom. If you look at the shareholder register at the NRC in Moscow, you will not see the name of that entity. Instead, you'll see the Bank of New York's custodian, which is a company called ING Eurasia. So the BNY entity had no right to call the meeting and did not provide any proof of its right to call the meeting. So basically, you have an EGM that should not have happened that was called in violation of the law. And BNY purported to delegate to Echo Telecom powers that it did not itself have. Other failures to comply with the law and VimpelCom's charter were failures to specify the material terms of the interested party transaction in the EGM resolution. The price of the IPT, the interested party transaction, was not determined by the board, which is a requirement of the joint stock company law. In fact, Alpha purported to determine the price itself, but the resolution that was put forward to shareholders did not specify the price. Instead, it specified a formula that you might give to a price based on certain events, but that was effectively left to the general director of VimpelCom. Neither did the resolution specify the parties to the transaction. Instead, it specified a bunch of alternative parties who, in fact, we believe were not actually the parties to the transaction that was completed by VimpelCom. Nor did the EGM resolution specify other material terms of the interested party transaction, including the fact that under VimpelCom's charter, 80% of the board is required to approve any acquisition. Under Russian law, the interested party transaction rules are intended to make completion of related party transactions more difficult, not easier. And so it would be perverse if by this device that Alpha purported to use here, they were allowed to bypass the board and go directly to the shareholders and have a transaction that was easier to complete than would have been the case had they complied with the law. So, you know, this is really a farce that should never have occurred. But unfortunately, because of the way Russian law works, we had to wait until after the EGM had been held and after the transaction completed and to show there was some harm done to bring the action. Does that address your issue?
Yes, thank you very much. But why haven't you filed the claim earlier? Because it's my understanding that the translation has been completed quite a long time ago.
It was completed, well, to the best of our knowledge, it was completed on November 11th. That's at least when VimpelCom filed the 6K indicating that it had been completed. The day after it was completed, we sent a letter to VimpelCom asking for additional information concerning the transaction. VimpelCom has consistently stonewalled and refused to provide either the board or the shareholders with any information concerning this deal. And as a consequence, it was hard for us to get the information to bring the case. And then by that time, we ran into the Western holidays and the Russian holidays and finally, you know, just decided to go ahead and bring the case now because we kept asking for information from VimpelCom but didn't get it. They've just been refusing to give it to us or to any other shareholders, which is just outrageous.
And may I ask one follow-up question?
Yeah, go ahead.
You pointed out that Pavel Kulikov didn't attend the shareholder meeting, the board of director meeting.
Correct.
But it's my understanding that since he was an interested person, he was not allowed to participate in this voting.
No, well, but it was necessary for him to attend, even though he's not allowed to participate in the voting, to form a quorum. Because under VimpelCom's charter, when a meeting is called at short notice, that is under 10 days, in order for the meeting to have a quorum and to proceed, all of the directors must sign a waiver of the 10-day notice requirement and attend. So it was necessary for him to attend in order for there to be a meeting.
Thank you.
Next one is Mr. Armpit Egerton, Capital.
Hi, I'd like to ask two questions, please. One is, what's the view of the independent directors on this? And secondly, is this a lawsuit where you're seeking damages? And if so, do the damages go to all shareholders or just Telenor or what?
With respect to the damages question, what we're seeking here is in the first case, for the court to invalidate the decision of the general meeting of shareholders that was taken, as we believe, in violation of law. In the second case, we're asking the court to unwind the transaction and restore the parties to the position they were in before the transaction was completed. That is to say, for the sellers of URS to return the purchase price proceeds to the purchaser, VimpelCom. So it would, in theory, benefit all shareholders if the cash came back to VimpelCom. Telenor is not asking in these cases for any damages for itself as such. It's really, and in this case, we should be very clear on this. This case has been brought, from our perspective, to benefit VimpelCom shareholders and to reduce the harm that we believe is being caused by this acquisition.
So you're absolutely categoric that there are no separate damages to VimpelCom, to Telenor. You are not trying to get separate damages to Telenor.
No, we're not trying to get some sort of costs or benefit to ourselves. We're trying to unwind the transaction and have it invalidated. That's correct.
And the second question is, what was the view of the independent directors on this?
That's a complicated question because I think they took different views at different times, and it's not always been the case that their views have been made public. And I would be very hesitant to put words in their mouth as to their views or to characterize their views. There were certain instances where the independent directors voted to reject this transaction. I believe it is public information that in one instance, the management of VimpelCom proposed to the board on September 16th, if my memory serves me correctly, that the board give management instructions to complete the transaction. In that instance, only three directors voted in favor of giving management instructions to complete the deal. And to my recollection, none of the independent directors voted in favor of that. So I think that may best characterize the
independent. Did they vote against it?
I think my recollection is some voted against it and some abstained.
Right. Would it be possible for the independent directors to get public saying what they thought?
That would have to be something for them. I mean, today Telenor is speaking in its capacity as a shareholder, and I think
right.
It would not be appropriate for us to speak as with respect to independent directors.
Thank you.
The next one is Mrs. Catherine Egerton.
Hi. I also have two questions. One is just if you could please comment on what impact you believe this lawsuit and also the court case that Telenor lost yesterday in Ukraine, what impact is currently happening on the operations of both businesses? And the second question is looking beyond these immediate lawsuits, what outcome you think is realistic with the current conflict between yourself and Alpha?
When it comes to impact of operations, we haven't seen so far any impact on the operations of the companies. So, I mean, VimpelCom is performing very well in their market, and also the same is for Kyivstar in the Ukrainian market. So we haven't seen no impact on operations. And the second question was,
something about a case.
Looking beyond the immediate lawsuits, if we look just a little bit further out, what outcome do you think is realistic in this current conflict between yourselves and Alpha? Beyond the immediate resolution from the lawsuits that you want to achieve in terms of overturning the URS transaction.
Well, what we think will be the impact, or should be the impact, is that VimpelCom will be back in good corporate governance based on the charter, and all parties, VimpelCom's management and the shareholders should behave according to this agreement which has been done. It is a very easy thing to do because it's all written down in paper in the charter and in the shareholders' agreement, and that should be the outcome of the case.
And sorry, can I just clarify one additional point? I was a little bit confused with an answer you gave to an earlier question regarding your concerns with VimpelCom management. Did that relate as well to the management of the operations? Because you mentioned now that VimpelCom is in fact performing very well in the market.
The corporate governance case when it comes to VimpelCom is regarding their investments. The investments when it comes to operations in the market and the marketing and the sales of the services, we feel fairly confident.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that last part.
Then we feel confident when it comes to the operation in the market.
You are confident with
yes.
How the operation is going?
At the moment, yes.
Okay.
Mr. Saif?
Yes, hello, Nicholas Saif from YG. Just two questions. First one, you're aiming to reverse the URS acquisition, but as the legal process is likely to take time, can you tell me, or can you give me a feel of how is the ERS going to evolve during that same time? Are the operation going to be deployed? Do you expect the vehicle car management to really make a push in the Ukrainian market? How do you think that also could affect the outcomes of the legal issue? And the second question, it's really about the VimpelCom management. I guess I'm a bit skeptical on understanding that you think that there is going to be no impact on the VimpelCom management, so I really mean the operational management, as the management team will be dragged into a fairly linked process with Telenor.
Yeah. When it comes to the first of your question about what will happen with URS during this legal process, we are very clear. We want to unwind the acquisition of the URS, and the company has to recommit to the shareholder or the charter and the youth corporate governance. And we don't think anything should be funded in the future when it comes to that acquisition. So it will be stopped, the investment in Ukraine, based on the URS deal. What I answered when it comes to point number two about the impact on the operation, I think that's what we see today, that it has no impact. What will be the case in the future? That depends on how responsive the management of VimpelCom and also Alpha Group will be on based on this case.
Okay, thank you.
Next one is Mr. Damnes from Morgan Stanley.
Yes, thank you. In the press release, you seem to attach importance to the identity of the beneficial owners of URS. I was wondering if you can, from your point of view and to your better understanding, who are the real beneficial owners of that asset and whether or not there is a cross conflict of alpha in that as well. Please, thank you.
This is Peter Ojisco from ORIC. We've asked that question repeatedly and again got no discussion, nothing from VimpelCom management on that. VimpelCom has not disclosed anything public concerning that. VimpelCom entered into what was called the further option agreement in the late summer of 2005, which was not the option agreement which was disclosed to shareholders. We got a copy of that agreement. There were five legal entities and one individual named as potential sellers in that agreement. The five legal entities were organized under the laws of British Virgin Islands and Cyprus, respectively. There was one individual who's an American citizen named as a potential seller. To the best of our knowledge, those were the entities that sold this company, but because the companies were located in DVI and Cyprus, it was not possible to look behind them. We've pushed Alpha and VimpelCom to disclose the true identities. Obviously, they both resisted to date. Why VimpelCom has resisted is a little bit mysterious, because it's a New York Stock Exchange-listed company that is a foreign private issuer and making filings with the SEC. In our view, when it comes to a case like this, they should be making that disclosure when shareholders are demanding it. They have refused to do so, which is peculiar. It suggests that there is something to hide, so we can only speculate. As it was mentioned earlier by Mr. Tigerson, Mr. Reznikovich was intimately involved in offering up and promoting the sale of this company first to Golden Telecom and then to VimpelCom, and had a business relationship with one of the principals of URS, at least at the time that the transaction was being promoted to Golden Telecom. Again, that suggests that there may be some involvement here, but we don't know. We've asked for the information. We think other shareholders should be demanding to see that. We think that any kind of situation like this in a publicly traded New York Stock Exchange-listed company is unacceptable, and that shareholders should be very focused on that. Another issue that's related is the fact that the 2005 budget of VimpelCom did not include any allocation for Ukraine. In fact, it was expressly excluded. So Mr. Zosimov in November 2005 when he spent $231.3 million, took that money from effectively unallocated funds. We don't even know where in the budget it came from. Again, Simplecom has refused to provide that information and has not disclosed that to shareholders. Apparently, they don't think it's material. We do. If you tried something like that in a U.S. company, you'd have a serious problem. So we think people should be outraged about that, frankly.
Thank you very much.
Next one is Mr. Tusovsky, private.
Hello?
Mr. Tusovsky? Hello?
No, take the next question.
Okay.
Good afternoon. Could you please comment on the fact that the majority of participating minority shareholders voted for the transaction and that overall a simple majority of the shareholders voted for the transaction during the EGM?
So we didn't get your name and where you're from?
This is Yuji Tosovsky. I'm a private investor.
We can address that. The vote passed by a very narrow margin. You're right in saying that there was a bare majority of shareholders that voted for this transaction, but it was really Alpha Group with 32.9% voting in favor, and then approximately 17% plus a small number of other shareholders that voted in favor. But in our view, that is somewhat irrelevant because we believe that the minority shareholders were deceived in this process, and Simplecom did not do a good job of disclosing the material information concerning this transaction to its shareholders. It simply put out the information that had been provided by Alpha, which was full of misleading information and half-truths. Alpha also put up on a website link to the Simplecom page on Yahoo Finance a document, a PowerPoint presentation that had been taken from a confidential board presentation. They had made some changes to it. Had some strange figures in it. There was a hot link from the Yahoo page saying vote for this transaction, and we think a lot of shareholders looked at that and were misled by it. When we became aware of it and made that public and contacted the SEC about it, that website came down and that presentation was taken off the web page. We think that probably played some role in the deception of minority shareholders into voting for this transaction.
Thank you.
If you have questions, please press star key followed by 1. There is no more questions. Oh, there you come. Mr. Richard Nassau again from BSCN.
Oh, good afternoon. This is Alex Kuznetsov from BSCN. I remember that some time ago you applied with the Russian regulatory authority to increase your stake in Simplecom to 45%. Could you update us on any progress regarding this issue, please?
That's correct. Telenor applied to the Federal Anti-Monopoly Service some time ago, and we've provided to the FAS all the documents that they've requested. At present, we're waiting for them to make a decision. We're confident that they will make a decision at some stage. So far as we're aware, they don't require anything additional from us.
And is there a certain time frame? Is there probably a certain legal time frame when decisions should be received?
There are, and those time frames have elapsed, but we understand it's a difficult decision for them to make, and we're being patient.
I see. Thank you.
Next one is Mr. Gordon from Auden Invest.
Yes, hi, good afternoon. My question is that in the press there are some comments that the reason that Telenor is against this deal is primarily because of their interest in Kyivstar in the Ukrainian in the country. And I wanted to hear your comments on that.
It is very important to understand that Telenor is supporting the entrance into Ukraine for VimpelCom. We have asked the management of VimpelCom really to come up with alternative solutions for this expansion into Kyivstar.
And there are no licenses available. The only license available is the one that URF holds. That's the only way to enter the Ukrainian market.
No, it's not. It's several other possibilities, like network sharing with MNO, service provider agreements, and so on. Perhaps you could fill in, Christian.
Another question is, if there are shareholders who believe that this is a good deal, is Telenor worried that there may be some countersuits that will be against Telenor, that they're stopping the expansion into a lucrative new market?
I mean, Jason said, you know, we are not opposing VimpelCom to move into Ukraine. What we're opposing is the way this deal has been, how this deal has been, deal's been dealt with. And we want VimpelCom to expand, but we wanted to do it at the right price and for the right reasons. What happened here is that the management went into the Ukraine opposing a decision without the okay from the board. And we've been looking at the business case, and this in our view, this business case doesn't hold water. And the price is ridiculously high.
For Telenor, it doesn't hold water because they already have an interest in Kyivstar. But for VimpelCom,
that's the whole point. We don't oppose any competition. We don't oppose VimpelCom moving into the Ukraine. We do compete in Hungary with Deutsche Telekom and Vodafone, and we're doing fine. They haven't lost market share. We are competing in the Ukraine, and if it wasn't VimpelCom taking up that company, somebody else would, but probably at a much, much, much lower price, or it would continue competing. Life been entering this market, getting adding market share from 0 to 6, 7, 8%, and we haven't lost any market share. We still have the same EBITDA margin. We're doing fine, and it's never been a harder discarded pickup than after Life entered that market. I mean, make no doubt about it. We don't oppose any competition. We do compete in all of the markets that we're in, and we're winning.
But this case is going to drag out for a long time, and all this time will pass. It's questionable if Telenor, if Vimpel will ever get their money back, because it's questionable how enforceable any decision of any Moscow court will be over these five companies. And it'll drag on for 2 years, and then for sure there'll be no window of opportunity to enter into Ukraine for VimpelCom. Everything will be lost.
No, I mean, let's be clear on a couple of things here. We do not have the alternative to simply roll over and allow this transaction to pass by in the way it's been completed. And maybe people are saying, maybe analysts are saying, we wish Telenor would just play nice and let this go by. But that's not the deal here. There has been essentially a fraud perpetrated in our view. Certainly laws have been violated that have resulted in the completion of this transaction without board authority, with $231 million being spent without allocations in the budget. That is unacceptable. In any normal publicly traded company, it's just completely out of line. What we're saying to Alpha and VimpelCom with these suits is, come back to the table, guys. Put the playbook from the mid-1990s away. This is 2006. This is not old Russia. You know, this is not the program. And get back into doing business so we can grow this company and create value. That's the message. And that's an easy message for these guys to take. They can change the playbook tomorrow. Why should we roll over and allow this fraud to go on the way it has? It's just nonsense.
And it should be a lot of viable alternatives to go into this market for VimpelCom. I mean, you have network sharing, you have MNOs, you have service provider solutions, and so on. For example, Telenor, when we entered the first time into Sweden, that was via a network sharing with Tele2. and Malawi has a, when the time was right, they bought an operator in Sweden, and then they can swap the MNO solution into that network. So it's depending on how you analyze the market and the solutions you find for this. But you should not overpay and make an unrealistic business model. That is not in the interest of the shareholders of InfoCom.
Well, some of the minority shareholders believe that it was a good deal. That you agree?
Let's look at that. I mean, the multiple here was on 2004 revenue was 64 times revenue. I'm sorry, but this company is not Google. I mean, why do you pay 64 times revenue for this?
Well, if a country with a 60% penetration rate is going to go to 90% in the next couple of years, it's a growing economy. Western-oriented, it's the right place to be. Whether or not you can save $50 million may not be the point. You're going to lose a year now and lose an entire market to life and to other operators, or someone else will swoop in and pick up this deal. You're losing more than you're gaining.
Well, there hasn't been that many other people, no other companies bidding for Welcome. And if you're looking at their business plan, you know, if they're going to reach a certain the amount of subscribers that they have in the business plan, they have to have almost 40% or about 40% of net adds in the coming years. And I think that's going to be very difficult for them. And they're not allocating anything in CapEx. So what they have to do is they have to have to fight their way into the market. They have to be very price competitive, and you know, in their business case, basically all the value is placed on the terminal value, with exceptionally high EBITDA margin and a very very low capex for that year.
And that's for the analysts to look at more, I guess.
Yeah, they should. Next question.
Mr. Christmas, so again.
Hello, good afternoon. I have two more follow-up questions. Are you considering changes in Biblecom's senior management given all those events that happened last fall? Second, do you have any estimates of the 2G wireless license in Ukraine? How much do you think a company was ready to pay for a 2G license alone?
When it comes to changes in management, the only thing I know about that is that the contract, Alexander's contract, is valid until October this year. The second question was that about the 3G license in Ukraine?
No, 2G. But if you have estimates of the value for 3G license, it would be helpful as well.
No.
Thank you.
Diamond is from Morgan Stanley again.
Yes, sorry. Just going back to your previous discussion with one of the previous participants in the call. You talked about some numbers in the URS business plan. I was wondering if you can share some of the numbers there, whether they have abnormal ARPU growth with rising margins and declining capex over the next 5 to 10 years in the terminal value. So probably the market can understand exactly why you think that transaction was a complete overvaluation over it.
I can't give you the details of their business plan, but what I can say is that what they're having ARPU expectations at about $5. And they're having very high EBITDA margin for 2010, about 45%, and that's basically where the number two player in the Ukraine, UMC, that's pretty much around consensus for 2006 for them. And they're having a capex to sales ratio that's below 10%, and that's about the same that we have in Telenor in Norway. So it's just their business case is just not holding water. We can discuss more detail, but
No, I think that's very clear. Thank you very much.
No more questions.
Okay. If there are no more questions, then I just want to thank you all for participating. And And please, if there are any other questions, please do not hesitate to contact the Investor Relations at Chattanooga. Thank you all.